AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
Dude, that's Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Smiley, it is my distinct pleasure for the first time really since the end of the Ryder Cup to welcome you with the following words. Welcome to The Smiley Show. It's yes. There's a little rust. I had to reconfigure the recording studio in here, but it's good to be back, man.
Honestly, I have not opened my laptop since the Ryder Cup, so I didn't even know if it was going to be turning on. I didn't know if my lights down here worked. I've been off of the grid when it's come to the show, and I've kept out with stuff in the game of golf, but as far as just having my brain turn on to doing podcasts, it was really, really nice to get away for a couple weeks. I wouldn't necessarily call it getting away because life was kind of busy, but it's been fun since the Ryder Cup.
We should preface it. There is a reason why. If you haven't picked up on this already as a viewer or listener, we are going down to one episode per week in the fall. So we hope you enjoyed the last 2 weeks with a lot of Tony Ruggiero, the Dew Sweeper. I don't know which was better, Smiley.
It was great 2 weeks. It was a good 2 weeks for Tony.
Hilarious podcast with Tony with all sorts of great stories about, you know, eating cheeseburgers and drinking Coors Light and getting his Ford Explorer repossessed and losing the power in his apartment and then making it to where he's now. Man,
that is an all-time quote. Hard to pick up chicks without power. and that is no truer words have ever been spoken.
It is about one of the truest things anyone's ever uttered. And then following up with that on YouTube, if you haven't seen it, his lesson with Smiley, which was, you know, I thought, like any of these things we do on the show, just fun to grab a club and mirror some of the stuff you're working on and see how you can improve your game in the process. And a good reminder of some of the things we were working on back then. But
very good reminder, by the way.
we've not been busy, Smiley, in the past couple of weeks. And so let's start with some life updates. And apologies, if you're here for the golf, you can hit the skip button. You can go ahead. We're going to get to that fairly soon. But for those of you that are interested, first of all, a warm, warm welcome to Harris Von Kaufman, the newest member of the Kaufman family. How's the little guy doing, Smiley? How many weeks are we in now?
Let's see. 2.5 weeks is where we're at now. He was born October 1st, so 3 days after the Ryder Cup. So we had a couple days at home, kind of getting life in order before we headed to the hospital. Gosh, we got up at like 3:50. It was a C-section, which is like having a tee time for a golfer. It's the most pleasurable thing for a male, knowing, okay, we got to get here then. Baby's out then. So it's a very structured thing for us routine golfers. So that was a nice deal to have. The C-section, it all for the most part went great. He was much bigger than we expected, 8 pounds, 12 ounces. The guy was an absolute unit. And he was weighing, you know, they lose weight in those first couple of days trying to get back to their birth weight once the milk eventually comes in. Long story short, 2 week appointment, he was 10 pounds. This guy is trending towards being potentially the first offensive line recruit in the Kaufman lineage history.
There is nothing. Well, I can't say this personally, but this is as my wife Amanda's told me, nothing more gratifying than scheduling the C-section and baby comes out and it's 8+ pounds. Like our daughter Kadick was 10 pounds and it was like, it's like right decision.
Wait, she was correct.
She was 10 on the dot.
No, she was not. I do not remember that.
Walker was 8'8", and Amanda was just like, I have a feeling that she's tracking bigger. And boy, was she. And on that note,
did Amanda carry Kadick? Like, did it feel like it was going to be a big baby? Like, was she measuring big the whole time?
She it was one of those things where I think, you know how you can carry it differently? Like the baby can sit differently.
Yeah.
Kadick was sitting a little bit different than Walker, and also Walker was breaching, Kadick was not. Yep, so the intent was to try to do the V-back, like the natural birth after having a C-section. And we got there and the night of delivery, Amanda was like, this is not happening. I need the C-section right now. So on that note, my next question is, how's Francie doing? Are we recovering well, happy, healthy?
She's great. She's spent so much time with Harris. That's the one thing that nobody tells you for the second kid is that you were pretty much full time with your oldest. And I kind of figured I was going to be helping a lot with Harris. But honestly, man, like I see him like in passing throughout the day. Like, how you doing, buddy? Good to see you. All seems to be going well. Eating good? Good. The milk seems to be nice. So he's in and out of having feeds throughout the whole day. They sleep way more than I remember newborns. Mm-hmm. And I've honestly just been playing full court defense with Anna Carter. We've had the best time, but also at the end of the day, my eyeballs are literally just like, where am I?
It's funny. It's such a nice lead in to the next question I had for you, which was just that, you know, it is that time when Kadick arrived. I remember that time being, not that I didn't have a relationship with Walker that was close, but that bonding time when it's just you and the eldest child while mama's taking care of the newborn is so special. And I've talked to you on the phone where you're going to swim practices. Like, oh, yeah. You're running Anna Carter's agenda right now.
Totally. Whether it's going to, you know, swim practice or going to dance class, I feel like I'm starting to show up now with some confidence with all of the other moms that are there with their little girls. And one of these mornings, I'm going to show up with a bottle of Sauv Blanc, and we're just gonna really yap it up, you know, shoot the a little bit. Let's gossip a little bit. Let's talk our talk here this morning at 9:30 in the morning with a little Sauv Blanc or a little Chard.
I love that so much. I can imagine just the ladies club, like the book club, just delighted to see SK walking in, you know, got AC rocking, ready to displace the latest hot gossip, a little bottle of white on him. I love it. I think it's a great brand play for you.
I tell you, I've talked more about baby products or just things that our toddler uses or our baby uses and who's pregnant. The amount of in the know that I am now about different things that people use, tricks of the trade, cooking, all the different activities around the neighborhood. Like, I am plugged the F in right now. Like, nobody knows more about what's going on in the baby, toddler, Birmingham scene as far as how to be involved as possible, and I just feel ready to rock and roll every day. I got the, you know, the double strap backpacks going. We got so water. I mean, just like whoosh, sucker, bang, pirate's booty, boom, and we're just absolutely pirate's hammering booty. It out.
Shout out pirate's booty. Yeah, it's those first couple months. I remember it was like I was doing the gym classes, I was doing school drop offs, pickups. It was like me and the moms, and you're just, you know, it's not a bad gossip mill to be on. You know, it's a fun little train. You know,
we call it gossip, yourself. But it's just I tell you what, if Charlie's calling for a work call in the middle of this, I'm not gonna miss what's going on here. We're gonna have to catch up later, Charles. You know, like this is important stuff right now.
I got to hear about the latest social. I got to hear about what's going on in Birmingham mom circles.
The pumpkin patch, you know, like everybody's got an opinion on where to get the pumpkins and kind of candy. There's a lot going on, man.
Yeah. Yeah. We just had I was unable to make the pumpkin patch run, but showed up with about seven of those things that are adorning my stoop right now. And the squirrels are going to take to those in less than a half week.
I was going to ask you this. How many pumpkins is too many pumpkins to where you're showboating how many pumpkins you bought? Because if you bought pumpkins and if you went to the pumpkin patch and actually purchased these things, they're not exactly – they're not overly expensive, but they're not cheap. But especially when you start to figure out, okay, we got to have, you know, four on this side, four – and it's like, all right, how many pumpkins is too many pumpkins?
Well, there's a lot of stuff that's going on right here, and I'm glad you bring this up because this, you know, as young parents, this is kind of our wheelhouse. It's first of all, these pumpkin patches, these apple picking things. I mean, the upcharge on these things nowadays. It used to be just, oh, we have a farm and we happen to open it for like a month or two per year to have people come here. Now you have things that exist just to serve this demographic. You know, the young moms on Instagram want to go and wear their UGG boots and their vests and take the pictures with the family. So the pumpkins themselves aren't expensive. Smiley's like holding up a hostage sign and we're watching on YouTube. Like,
I'll drop the album.
Yeah, I can't wait to see the album. But I think that a lot of this depends on. Are you all a big like Halloween decoration house?
We appreciate everybody else's floats.
diplomatic of you. Same way. I love to walk, take the kids around the neighborhood and appreciate the other decorations, but we aren't. That's our stance.
We're not a float family. Now we do appreciate the inflatables from everybody else, yep. But not for us.
I got a skeleton wolf that howls. That's the only Halloween related decoration I have, and I just get a kick out of it because Walker thinks it's funny. He tries to pet it, and the dogs like to bark at it. But that's the only, and then it's just pumpkins. So I think what happens is, the less Halloween decorations you have, the more pumpkins you have to feel like you didn't do anything for the holiday. Does that track within your neighborhood?
I think so. Two things I have to add here is, first off, when did they start getting more pumpkins other than orange ones? Like, when did all this happen?
Yeah.
From my childhood, all I remember is orange pumpkins. I show up to this pumpkin patch and there might have been 30 different variations of a pumpkin. When did we start crossbreeding these things?
It's like cleats. Remember as kids, cleats, you could get black cleats. You get, black cleats that had white Adidas stripes on them, white Nike stripes on them, like that was it. Then now these kids nowadays, they can get every color in the rainbow. Same with pumpkins. You can get white pumpkins, orange pumpkins. You can get white pumpkins that are speckled with orange. You can get brown ones. I don't know how they're breeding.
We have a yellow popcorn pumpkin, and we also have a green orange pumpkin, and they're phenomenal. Like the color scheme with all of these different colored pumpkins, it's definitely great. But the second point I was going to ask is, when it comes to how much is too much pumpkins on your front porch. And we kind of felt like we had our setup good. And for the most part, the neighborhood's fairly similar to us. Like, nobody's overdone it to a point where, like, man, they really decided to be, the house on the street that has the best pumpkin setup. I was over at my brother's house and they had just gotten their setup, pretty normal amount of pumpkins they have on their porch. And then the next day, they literally look across the street and they're like, what in the world? The across the street neighbors basically doubled them up. Like, you can't have your across the street neighbor, showing you up. That's where I draw the line.
It's like a Christmas vacation scenario, right? Like where they got the light, you're trying to outcompete each other with the lights. Yeah, it's a tough scene. I mean, I feel like it depends on your front door setup too. I think we have like three steps. So I think we have six pumpkins. We have a pumpkin for each step. But again, I also think that's overkill because the squirrels here take those things down in less than a week. And you've got these like rotting pumpkins.
I didn't know the squirrels were going to be an issue with these pumpkins.
It depends on what types of squirrels you have. North Carolina notoriously has very aggressive squirrels, especially in Pinehurst. They have those big black squirrels that really they're larger than the regular gray squirrels. And but here's even at Durham, the squirrels, they love the pumpkins.
I will say that we have these pumpkins are basically camouflage for all these squirrels. But the squirrels are out and about, don't get me wrong. Yeah, and the reason why is we have 300 acorns in our front yard right now. And they're landing on our house all night right now. Just douche. It just feels like we're just getting
like
hit. Yes, we're getting hit with hail all night.
Yeah. Well, and I also say too, I've noticed less of the pumpkin eating now that I installed the skeleton wolf. Skeleton wolf's doing a great job of scarecrowing or whatever he's meant to do. So shout out skeleton wolf.
Speaking of, what are you guys being for Halloween?
That's so great. I was going to ask you the same question. So Walker has taken a liking to many movies, but he started watching How to Train Your Dragon, and he loves Toothless, the sort of the main character dragon from How to Train Your Dragon.
Well, I have to do some research.
Yeah, so it's got a very cute little costume. Amanda, I think, is going to be another dragon from that movie. Unclear. I think she ordered a costume late. So she really wanted Kadic to be a fairy. Like, she had a little cute fairy costume for Kadic. I'm like, let's make her like a, women's soccer player. So I'm just like, that's ridiculous. She's going to be a fairy. So I'm like, what am I supposed to be? So she's like, why don't you be the master's gnome? It's like, okay, I could be sold on the master's gnome, little gnome fairy thing. So I got one of those, like the caddy uniforms that everyone orders. I got like the full white caddy uniform. It's got Kadic on the back nameplate.
Great.
I got the little white beard somewhere around here. I mean, you can kind of see him over my shoulder right here. I'm going to look a lot like that guy, and I'm going to be holding my little daughter, Kadic, as a fairy. We're going to be a little gnome and fairy.
Okay.
How about that?
I'm here for that.
How about you? What do you you dialed it in yet?
Anna Carter has a different one every day, but I think she's settled in on Galinda from Wicked, and I think we're going to go with a I think we're going to go with like a Wizard of Oz theme. So there's a chance I'll either be the Tin Man or Scarecrow, is what I've been told.
Classic.
So it sounds like that's actually best case scenario. Last year was Peter Pan. So being Scarecrow sounds a lot better. Throw like a flannel on and some jeans with a hat or something. Like that's way, way better than wearing tights.
you're like reliving roles in like an elementary school play, which I was never in an elementary school play. I feel like that's like just a thing that happens in a movie. Would you were ever in a play when you were in
Me and Big J. James were the co-stars. He was I was Frosty the Snowman. I think he was I think he was Santa Claus, which is honestly something that he is like every year.
He can do it.
If we ever need him to be Santa Claus, we just say, hey, do you mind? He's got like a legit Santa Claus costume. He'll dye his beard white. Next thing you know, Santa's coming to town. He's done it for AV and his family.
I love it. Well, there we go. We're all kind of dialed in October. It's also both my children, I should say, it's their birthday month. In fact, the time we're recording, it's Sunday, October 19th. Walker turns 3 tomorrow.
Oh.
And yeah. How about that?
Little buddy turning 3.
Little buddy turned 3. Katie turned 1 on the 1st.
How about
the
that?
Fifth,
how,
I'm sorry.
How fast did that go? He's about to be a 3-nager just like that.
It's insane. Stripe on the golf ball. Took him out to the range today. Just love
there
him.
There you
life.
Go.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, Smiley, we are going to get to the golf. I apologize for the I don't know what I want to say here.
It's just not a ton of golf.
There's not a ton of golf. So we can keep going the personal updates because you've been busy. I've also been busy in my own right. And there's a little bit of weightiness to this next update. But I promise you, I find it very hilarious and light. And I found the positivity in this is that the week before the Ryder Cup, on the show before, we've had on both Lance Armstrong and Joel Damon. I've discussed the fact that back in 2012, I had testicular cancer. I caught it very early. I had it removed and unfortunately was able to avoid chemo or radiation, which was huge. And every year since then had surveillance. Everything was great. The Monday before the Ryder Cup, I had been feeling off, went to the doctor, got checked on Tuesday, got an ultrasound. They found that it returned on the other side. And, you know, so in a lot of ways, it's obviously a heavy diagnosis. My dad's going through something much heavier, really, in terms of cancer. But the sort of fortune of that misfortune is that he's currently being seen at Memorial Sloan Kettering, and we reached out to Memorial Sloan Kettering.
Oh, I didn't know that. I was trying to figure out what the connection was with that to that hospital. Okay,
I could not have had it happen in any sort of a better way because I had a flight booked to New York City on Wednesday to go up for the Ryder Cup. In contact with Memorial Sloan Kettering that entire day, they were amazing to get me appointments in short order. So, the Thursday and Friday at the Ryder Cup, I wake up before dawn. I take a car into the city, go to Memorial Sloan Kettering, do all my appointments. I take the car back and take the shuttle from our airport hotel out to Bethpage Black, do our shows, take the shuttle back late at night, and then rinse, repeat, and do the whole thing over the next
day. Which, by the way, with all that going on, bravo, did a hell of a job managing really a show. Like, it was a legit show. If you got a chance to watch the production from the Ryder Cup, that was a lot of fun for us, and Charlie absolutely crushed the host role that week. So shout out to Charlie there.
Well, you're kind of saying, and I'll return the thanks and the appreciation because, you know, I talked to you. You said, hey, look, we can pull the plug on this entire thing if you want to. I talked to Jack.
Jax is about to step in there. He was about to be Reese Davis there for a second.
Jax is on the sideline. It's just, you know, getting some throws in, warming up the arm a little bit, just kind of looking. It's like, yeah, he looks like he's seriously injured. I think I might need to go in the game right now. But Jax was an amazing support system as well, the production side, the rundown building side. So I'm forever grateful to the two of you for the support that week. And then we had surgery the Wednesday after the Ryder Cup, had it removed, and then the week after found out that once again I'd caught it early, no need for chemo or radiation. I think it's a great lesson in paying attention to your body. If you're a young male out there, I like to say I'm a young male. I'm not young anymore, but I was once when I first had a diagnosis. Mm-hmm. It's worth just paying attention. It's worth self-checking. It's worth, if there's something going on that feels like it's wrong, it can't hurt to go get seen by a doctor, see if it's worth getting an ultrasound, because better to be safe on the early end and end up like me than have to go through a lot of treatment like many others have to. And so I think it's, and I'll say too, like many of you on the show, I posted something on Instagram, reached out. I'll forever be just so grateful and thankful to everyone that supported me, everyone that prayed for me, everyone that sent their love, those weeks in there where I really needed that support. You all were there, and it means the world to me. And I think I can only be grateful for how this entire thing went. It was an opportunity for me to talk to my dad, tell him what an inspiration he's been for me going through his own sort of battle with this. And look, I got two beautiful kids, as we just discussed the front end of this episode. I'm feeling really, really good about this clean bill of health. Now we sort of do some surveillance, do some other sort of management of the things that happen after this. But you know, really the worst part was 6 weeks no golf, Smiley, and I'm already chipping and putting, so they can't stop me.
Oh, God, man. Yeah, I'm proud of you. You handled the whole thing like a champ. You know, we're praying for you through that whole time, but just you had great spirit through the whole thing, man. It's so easy to question it all, but the timing of it all just was crazy to me. You know, like we're ending like this, we were doing two episodes a week for an entire year, and like we have no time, we're always working, and we get to literally like the end of what we call like into off season, and all of a sudden like it was the perfect timing. Like the same day that we're having Harris is the same day you're having surgery. It was like, how, like this, like are the stars aligning? It was definitely felt like a God thing here and all this. So we're very happy that you got a good outcome from all this.
Well, it means the most to me. And yeah, thanks again to everyone out there that reached out to support. I'm very blessed and very fortunate, very grateful. And you know, we get to keep rolling with these shows, man. So that's it's back to business as usual.
I do want to see you pull a hamstring to where Jax has to come in off the bench, though. Like,
I kind of like that visual. Yeah, just hopefully it's a hamstring, like not like another recurrence of cancer. I think I'm done with cancer. I think two times was enough for me. So
two time champ,
baby, undefeated. Just beat those boys up. So what do you say, Smiley? There's no real way to transition out of that into golf, but shall we talk some golf?
Yeah, let's do our best. Let's see what I got.
Well, let's start with we have more topical items that we're going to discuss, but really we were there standing. I laughed thinking about our last episode we did together because we thought we had the perfect backdrop, the perfect vantage point, the vantage point of all vantage points to do the recap of the Ryder Cup. We were at the top of the bleachers on the first tee at Bethpage Black, looking down at the big video board, all these fans surrounding Team Europe as they're about to get the trophy presented to them. And then they'd cut on that PA system. And it was like, okay, they're not going to hear anything that we're going to say. So we relocated to an adjacent hill.
Early in the week, I had even said, it was like, hey, let's maybe do like on a 1 or like on 14. Because I even said in my mind, and I don't know if I said it out loud, that it's going to be too loud with all of the post game stuff that they do. And even when you said, hey, we're going to do it up there, it still didn't even click because I was so worn out from literally hiking. I was literally hiking for 3 straight days, and I had nothing left to give besides whatever I had just seen. It was just a bizarre Sunday.
Well, it just, so let's just wrap with some, like, any big picture thoughts you came away from the Ryder Cup with. You know, I mean, there's a lot that's happened since. A lot of it's been, you know, focused on fan behavior and where do we go from here. But I just wonder if, given more time to reflect, you have additional thoughts on how the Ryder Cup went down.
Yeah, since we have finished the Ryder Cup and haven't necessarily done a wrap on it, the couple of the storylines that have come up, first off, the guy from the PGA of America, Don something, what's his name?
I think his last name's Ray, the Eminem Don Lose Ray. Yourself karaoke, yeah.
That was a storyline. We would have definitely talked about that on the pod if we had a chance, because he, like, for whatever reason, goes out Sunday morning and basically gives an interview that, to sum it up, just says, you know what, I think these fans are doing a great job. And it's just like, it was just so tone deaf of, you know, I didn't hear anything. It was just not the right time as the head of the PGA when you're the host in the U.S. to condone any type of behavior that week. It was mum's the word was the right way to go if you're the head honcho that week. And he doubled down. He's like, nah, I think we're nailing it.
and then saying Eminem Lose Yourself karaoke that night, and I just thought that in the later that week at the Dunhill Links Championship, you had like Yasser singing Sweet Caroline karaoke with Johann Rupert. Just the whole thing was crack, like just golf karaoke world happening. As it relates to the PGA of America, definite miss by Don Ray, however we're saying his last name. But you know,
Big Don, man, he's.
but you know, the CEO Derek Sprague had to come on over the top and basically say, "Hey, like, we are not condoning this behavior." Like, I think that there was messaging, enough messaging there from the PGA of America of like, that was not the right tack to take. And, you know we need to clean this thing up. And you know, and that's not necessarily being an apologist for what happened. I think what happened was, as I said in some of our recaps, was I still, you know, when I talk to people about following some of these groups around being inside the ropes, I'll never forget on Saturday, the Saturday afternoon, I believe it was, this would have been a foursomes where it was Rory and Shane Lowry playing against JT and Cam Young. And just seeing Shane just get showered with insults, he hit a shot out of the right rough on five. And like, we just briefly made eye contact and we both looked like our dogs had died. It just like, it wasn't fun out there. And I think that's the bummer of it is that, you know, we had Sunday and Sunday was amazing. And Sunday was so focused on the competition itself. And I think the biggest miss was, in my opinion, I'm curious to hear what yours is, but no one did the thought exercise of, if we rile up the crowd like this and we pump them up, what happens if we get boat raced on Friday and Saturday? Like, what happens then? Because if they have nothing to root for, where do we turn? And it's a New York crowd, and they're going to start just lathering the insults onto the Europeans, and many of them are going to be out of bounds. And so I think it's a little bit of that. I think it's a little bit of, you know, are we growing the game in the right way? You know, like, are we in growing the game? Are we educating the people that we're growing it to about what this game represents beyond just getting a little white ball in a hole? You know, it's a game that's built on respect for your opponent. And it's still based on competition, but there's a lot of things that are built in as to how you play and go about the game of golf that are really important that I think are being missed as the game grows. That's something I think we got to fix and correct. But, you know, Sunday I thought was a lot better because there was something to root for. And there was, man, I followed the Tommy Fleetwood, Justin Thomas match from 10T to 18 green. And that's some of the most awesome golf I've seen in my entire life. There were definitely some out of bounds insults there, ones I didn't love, but I just thought it was much more focused on, we have a match here. There's a comeback happening. We're rooting for a close competition instead of like, I'm so sick of watching my guys get beat up and I'm just going to throw a bunch of out of bounds insults at these guys. Because that's not what it should be about ever.
No. Well, it's no doubt. It's a true rivalry. Like, I don't think either of these sides care for each other. You know, they're very, very cordial. They're friendly throughout the entire year. But when it gets to Ryder Cup week, I think both sides, both locker rooms, whether they say they're just focusing on their team or not, every single player is saying, I'm going to take down this person this week, and probably saying other explicitives along with it. And that's just the bottom line. I think the players have bought into how important this week is and how it can change your career as far as how you're looked when you finish playing. And there's been a couple players from that European side that have absolutely turned themselves into Ryder Cup stars. You know, Tommy Fleetwood, Tyrrell Hatton, Victor Hovland, Rory McIlroy, Justin. There's just so many legendary Ryder Cup players on this Europe side, Tommy Fleetwood, that are just, they're just going to go down as, gosh, I mean, what a team they had. That's what I continue to go back to, is that Europe was better. Now, yes. I think America will say that, hey, we're going to look at the ball striking numbers, and it was pretty similar. It didn't ever feel that way to me out there. It always felt like the European teams had the better pairings. They were better off the jump. Now, I know that they had the honor on the first tee, which is one thing I want to talk about. That's the one thing that's kind of stuck in my brain, is why does the away team get to tee off first? I think it's so important to have the tee in match play. It seems that wouldn't the whole team want that advantage to be able to tee off first?
And is it, and apologies for my ignorance here, but is that how it's written? It's the away team goes first, or is it the cup holders go first, have the honor?
Ooh, I don't know. That's a good question. But I think the away team probably goes first, although I think it should be the opposite. Like, when you think about
home team should,
like you would think, just like baseball, you get to hit last. I don't know if baseball is the best example because they actually are in the field second, but in the field first and not hitting first. But I don't know. I always felt like the Europeans, the last two Ryder Cups, they've had blue on the board throughout the entire time, like early. The U.S. has really struggled to get the tee box. They've been better right off the jump. And that was the most important part to me about looking back at this Ryder Cup, was that they had teams that were prepared and ready. And I honestly think that Europe felt they were the better team. They played like it too.
I completely agree. I think that's the one bummer of what's been lost in this whole discussion about the fan thing, is like, what a thrilling performance Hira put on Friday and Saturday. Like, really, if you're looking just at brilliance in terms of playing golf and match play competition, Europe on Friday and Saturday, and then the Americans on Sunday, like, that's as good as it gets on either side. It was so cool to watch that, but it got lost in all this other stuff. And I think on the American side, like, sure, you can say all you want about looking at the data and ball striking, we were better. Well, then don't set it up to make it a putting contest. Like, it's Bethpage Black.
The setup was bad, buddy.
Why would you neuter the course like that if you didn't want it to be a putting contest? Now, I get that it's like, okay, our putters could have gotten hot too, sure. But I think that unfairly is not the right word, but you tilt the competition in the direction of randomness at that point. Like, if you set up Bethpage Black to make it a difficult, demanding test, the cream was always going to rise to the top, right? So, like, that's the way you should do it. Instead of saying, let's just set it up like this and hope that our putters are hotter than Europe's this week. Like, I don't get that. I really don't.
The only other thing I'll mention, I may have said this too on the Sunday recap, was that once the greens finally got to a speed that was actually what they requested, which was like around 12 and a half, I think is what the Americans wanted it. It got that on Sunday. You could see the ball starting to creep away a little bit. And unshockingly, the Americans played better. They outplayed the Europeans on Sunday. And I think a little bit of that has to do with the speed of the greens, but also I think Luke Donald, rightfully so, played his guys. You know, 30, most of the guys didn't sit, you know, when it came to playing throughout the entire time, because once you get a lead like that, especially an away lead, he definitely decided not to throw out his depth. He's like, you know what, I'm just gonna keep sending my guys out there. And I think that was a big difference on Sunday, as we kind of closed up this Ryder Cup talk, was that it felt like the Americans were hungrier on Sunday. They were better rested for the most part, and the players who had not played well, like Scottie Scheffler, who had not won, they were motivated to win. And when you have those guys winning their matches, Cam Young winning their matches, and Europe kind of front loading, it was like, okay, now you got all these guys back here who hadn't played as much for Europe that somehow got to win some points. And they almost did it, man. It was crazy.
I mean, I still am stunned and captivated by just standing there. I'm trying to remember the order of guys that I watched come in. I think it was JT, Bryson and Scotty, and there was like a big gap because there were a couple of matches that ended early. But watching all those come down to the wire, I mean, Scotty and Rory just stumbling in at the finish of like, please get me off this golf course and into like some Normatec boots or an ice bath or like just anywhere else than playing five, you know, rounds of golf in 3 days at high leverage golf. I mean, I just think about moments where, because you talked about this, you know, seeing a lot of blue on the board. And I think about moments where Europeans should have been out of holes or should have been, you know, allowing the Americans to get back into it. Like the shot that Rom hit on Friday on the sixth hole from like the trash left. Like, he shouldn't even be able to get a club on that ball. But the way that they, and I realized the lilac bat, it was lighter than he thought it was when Johnson went hit the shot. But it's like there were a lot of things that where I felt like, man, these guys hit it there, now we have a chance. And then not only are they, you know, having the hole, sometimes they're creating birdie opportunities and winning holes that they should have been completely out of. And I think that they would have been better suited setting up Bethpage Black like a major.
There was no penalty at all, tee to green. I hardly ever saw a player not be able to get literally from the tee to the green. The whole golf course is par fours pretty much. I think there's 12 par fours at this place. And there was no problems ever getting into the green at two from either rough, bunkers, fescue. There was no penalties out there at all. Everybody was kind of playing from the same spots from the fairways, and everybody was kind of having similar putts. And I thought they hit it a little bit better. And obviously they putted way better, but yeah, gosh. I think the last part too, if you would have had the Molinari brothers, I think if they were on the American side from a stat standpoint, and whatever data that they're using, they seem to have a better jump on how to pair their teams. Now I get that they got experienced players, they got some formidable pairings that have worked, but they also switched some things up and they definitely played towards form and the golf course. They were smart about who they paired their guys with. And I think there were plenty of plenty of pairings that you can look to for the United States side, players that you felt were maybe misused. And was this all Keegan's fault? No, I'm not putting full blame on Keegan, but yes, ultimately he does put the pen to paper. But I think the stats guys from the American side are definitely getting put it stuffed in a locker right now.
Yeah, I mean, you hear things like, this is John Wood's first year on the job, and he's really kind of, you know, he's working to gain some experience and put together a more comprehensive organizational plan in the years to come. I look forward to seeing that. You know, I think he could do a great job with that.
Well, he doesn't have anything to do with like the pairings. I'm talking
sure,
about
but,
pairings.
Well, you're correct in the pairing thing, and I was almost extending it a little bit to just the entire program that Luke Donald has put together the past two Ryder Cups. You know, we heard things in the press conference about he got at the team hotel and it was like the sheets are wrong and the pillows are wrong and like the shampoo and conditioner is wrong, you know, just the care to detail, you know, that is one side of the player experience. And then to your point on the stats side, having someone that really, you know, really a team of those two guys that have sifted through all these possible outcomes and have come up with ways to gain an advantage in a way that it seems like the U.S. has not done. I'm curious, do you think Luke runs it back for Adair Manor? Do you think we see one of the Molinari brothers as the captain at Adair Manor?
Ooh, I don't know, man. Three would be a lot.
Three's a lot, right?
Like, I mean, Luke doesn't play a whole lot. Maybe that he's just enjoying doing this. He's probably,
I love him.
I mean, he can make his so much money being the European Ryder Cup captain by doing outings. Like the amount that these guys are making per pop is stupid. So I mean,
they do it for the love of the game.
I know. But that is one side of it. Is that yes, there are some nice benefits. Although they're playing for more than they won't. What was the whole saying that week? They're playing for more than just money.
Yeah,
is what it was.
Something like that. This was. That was
God, they won. Game. They won that game.
They really. And that's why I say it's like, you know, we can sit here as Americans and be like, you know, tongue in cheek, shaking our fist at things, but they, like, hats off to the European side. They got every detail right. They really did. Like, from all the minute things like the shampoo and conditioner to the statistical, you know, pairings, things like that, to the actual on-course product. You know, I mean, I still am just like, I'm so blown away by Justin Rose, of just like his career arc and just the way he played that
so
week.
So good. Holy moly.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And and there were so many guys like
he
that.
He didn't miss a shot for 2 days. And I'm telling you, not only was his ball striking elite, but he didn't miss a putt inside of 10 feet for 2 days.
The putt he walked in on Saturday in that match with Bryson and Scott, he's like, this guy's playing a different game than everyone else. Like, he's playing with the greatest player on earth right now, and he is the greatest player on earth in this very moment.
I need to go find my yardage book at some point to go do the stats, because I kept on having to keep them up with them myself because the service out there was so bad. And at one point, like, Justin and Tommy were playing together in four ball, and they had, I think, combined had hit every single green but one and every fairway but one. It was just, and I know the golf course was easy tee to green. It was just basically target golf. But still, man, like, that's the most important thing in four ball, is like, you got to have two putts. Make yourself have two putts on every hole, and it just continues to pile up pressure on the other team. And that's ultimately what they did. And I obviously didn't get to watch all the other matches, but hard team to beat when guys are playing that good. Europe was unbelievable.
And that's a perfect segue to where we're going to go next, because we were talking about that specific match, the Bryson Scotty, Justin Rose, Tommy Fleetwood match. And so you had the number one player on earth playing with the guy who was the number one player in that session, like within those 4 hours, Justin Rose, and the guy who I think was the number one player on earth that week at Bethpage Black, and maybe continues to be the hottest player on the planet, Tommy Fleetwood. And we're sitting here at time recording, looking back at his DP World India Championship win, and just looking back the past couple of months, because nobody's been on a heater like Tommy Ladd has these past few. So, first PGA Tour win at East Lake to win the 2025 FedEx Cup. He is the leading points earner at the Ryder Cup, won 4 points to lead Team Europe to that win on foreign soil. And Smiley, this DP World India Championship win also represented a first, maybe not the one that you think of immediately. So here's what I want to do. I want to take a listen to Tommy Ladd's thoughts after this win.
He just said randomly, he said, "Hey, do you know what you've never done? So you've never won a tournament, and then I've been able to run onto the 18th green. And I was like, I'm writing that down. So I had that written down all week. Like I say, it's just another opportunity, really. There's going to be many more times where I hopefully get the chance to do that. But that was like all day today. Had in my mind, you know, could I put myself in a position where I can actually make that moment happen? So it's just one of those little things. It means a lot to me. Like, it means so much to me. And that was really cool. That's what I wanted to do all day.
The he, of course, that Tommy is talking about is his son, Frankie. And there's one more image that I want to put up here just to share with you, because I just love this image so much. You know, we're here talking, opening this episode with talking about dad stuff, and here they are hugging on the 18th green. The hug that Frankie was looking forward to and wanted. And Smiley, we're going to get into some Tommy stats. We're going to get into just, you know, this week, these past few months, and just the year he had in 2025. But, you know, newly minted boy dad over here, watching Tommy share this moment with Frankie. I mean, like, does it get any better than that, man?
Tommy's easily probably the most easy to cheer for player right now in the game. Just comes across so well to so many different people, and his game is so fun to watch. He's just relatable, I think, is the easiest way to describe him. You know, his golf game is effortless, but the way in which he speaks, it just comes from a place of true authenticity, where it feels like he's, you know, just doesn't have a bad bone in his body, would never speak bad about anybody he's ever met. And I could definitely speak to that too, just being around him personally. He's works his tail off. He cares about his job, but when it comes to, you know, off the course, when even the Ryder Cup socials, just getting a glimpse into Ryder Cup Europe in the team room, and watching these players interact, and just seeing how much everybody got along with Tommy, and unshockingly seeing him win this week is no surprise to me whatsoever, because this golf course, if you had an opportunity to see any of this place this week, an absolute nightmare for a player like myself. This place was jungle wall to wall. I went onto this leaderboard to see like what these guys were shooting, because I don't know if I would have ever gotten off this first tee.
And that's amazing.
It was a pretty wide range. It looked like if you hit the fairways, which it looked like a short golf course, if you found all the fairways, mm-hmm. it looked like it'd be a pretty easy course. But if you didn't, there was some pretty big disparity between the bottom and the top. There were some guys that were also had the high odds out there. So shout out. There was one hole that kind of bent right to left, and like you had to hit like a little bit of a draw. And I was just thinking, like, what club would I hit right here? Like, would I try to like clip some leaves with a driver with a fade, and just like hopefully that would take enough off of it? Because there's nothing, I can't stand up there and hit a 3-1 and expect to try to turn one over and have a tight little draw. Like that's not in the card. I either have the toe slammer or the spinny right. Like that's the 3-wood if I have to like make myself hit a draw.
That is I love, just one of my favorite things, we break down some of these tournaments and videos I've not seen before, is what would this feel like for Smiley Kaufman? So thank you for painting that illustrious tapestry.
I'd be
there
shaking on that team, man. Holy crap.
And look, the critique of Tommy in the past has been he doesn't win big events. We're not claiming that the DP World India Championship is like the strongest event in the world, right? Like I went back and looked at the OWGR. It was the 48th strongest field in 2025, which comes in slightly above like all the PGA Tour opposite field events, slightly below most of the elite DP World Tour events. But just looking at his 23 starts this year across majors, DP World Tour, PGA Tour, Tommy's had 2 wins, 8 top 5s, 9 top 10s, 14 top 20s. He's only had 5 finishes outside the top 25. He only had 1 missed cut, the U.S. Open at Oakmont, which I think bamboozled a lot of guys out there, a lot of really good players. So, you know, not crazy. Of course, mentioned before, leading point scorer at the Ryder Cup, goes 4-1-0, and the only loss he had was that thriller singles match with Justin Thomas, where I don't know that JT was losing to anybody on Sunday. He was a man on a mission. So we talked about prior to the Ryder Cup, after the PGA Tour season had ended, our player of the year podium. And so the question I want to pose to you now is, Smiley, what if the player of the year was across all events, not just the PGA Tour? So we're including, you know, DP World Tour, we're including the Ryder Cup here. And it's inclusive this entire year, 2025. Is Tommy still your bronze medalist behind Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy?
Yeah, and I felt bad that he was my bronze when you asked me this question after the Tour Championship. I was so prisoner of the moment. But I really do think that JJ, after the Tour Championship, thinking back and doing just a little bit more thought, or just thinking about it a little bit more, I probably would have had JJ at third. I think that was the right answer. Mm-hmm. And after the Ryder Cup, I'd change my answer. And then, not that DP World Tour Indy event changes anything. Like, it doesn't make one hop or jump over anybody whatsoever. But it does add to what an incredible year that Tommy Fleetwood has had. And yes, yeah, still bronze. I still think what Rory starts of the year and winning the Masters, I think that's, I mean, that's clearly the next step for Tommy, is like getting over the line at a major championship.
Well, without a doubt. And you know, we're looking at, still haven't, don't have the up, recording Sunday nights, so we don't have the updated OWGR, we don't have the updated data golf rankings, but I don't think they're going to move much based on the DP World India Championship. So he was entering the week fourth in the data golf rankings, fifth in the world rankings. What I'm
accurate. Accurate.
Yeah, pretty well. And so that, the next question I had for you is, just given his current form, is, are we entering big three territory in 2026 with Scotty, Rory, and Tommy? And if we are not, which other guy should hear me read that statement and take an issue with it? Like, I need some names here.
Well, gosh, I mean, that's tough. I mean, is this in regard to majors or how they play in PGA Tour events? Because, you know, if we're putting this, like, because John Rahm is a, you know, what we saw from him at the Ryder Cup was obviously incredible, and what he potentially could do at some majors could would be a name that you would have to talk about. And you know, Xander Schauffele, to see what he might potentially do. I know you want to talk about him here in a minute. I'm not putting Tommy in this category with Scotty and Rory. I feel like those two are in a category by themselves. Mm-hmm. I think Tommy is definitely in that next tier of guys who I think have the capability of winning major championships, win signature events, you know, potentially can play their way into being a solidified third player in the world from a world ranking standpoint. I think everybody has work to do to chase down. Obviously, Scotty's got a, you know, 3-touchdown lead, but maybe if Rory were to have an off year to become the second player in the world, like Tommy, definitely in that category for certain for how he's played. But I'm not ready to pronounce that he's in this big three category just because of. I hate to use age as a mm-hmm. as a reason why, but his consistency for certain, the way he hits the golf ball, the feeling that he has no weaknesses. But I will say that, yes, he does hit it fairly far, but is it like, is he gaining strokes mm-hmm. off of the tee like Scotty and Rory do with their length to a degree over the course of an entire year? I still feel like that's such an important stat. I know he hits a lot of fairways, but I still feel like the more distance that he can pick up, the better it'll be for Tommy, because I think to be the best player in the world, you can't just be just a little bit above average when it comes to distance off the tee. And I hate to make that be a reason just from an age perspective.
Well, no, I mean, I think it's fair. And you ask me what my criteria is, and the criteria is embracing debate and golf punditry. And there is no set time frame or period. It's just like, how do we feel in this moment, which I realize is a flaw system. And it's one that we like to do it because, I mean, I'm even thinking back when we talked to Victor Hovland after what a run he had to finish 2023, you know, and winning the Tour Championship and being one of the key players on that team that won in Rome, and thinking, man, this guy's right there alongside Scotty and Rory and Rahm and all these guys. And so, you know, he's got to back it up. I just think for Tommy, it is seemingly this breakthrough that he's made on the individual stroke play side, you know, with this win at the Tour Championship where he knocked on the door so many times. He had the near miss at Memphis. He had the near miss at the Travelers. And, you know, now all of a sudden he's had this breakthrough win. And then he goes to the Ryder Cup where he's thrived before and he plays, you know, maybe as good as he's ever played in a Ryder Cup. And then he goes back on the DP World Tour and he wins another stroke play individual event. So for me, it's like just tracking that trend and what's different. And is it literally just down to a mindset that's shifted in some way, shape, or form? And so, and, you know, with that kind of playing it forward, looking at 2026, I'm going to read you all four of the major venues, right? Masters, of course, Augusta National, that is a move. PGA Championship at Aronimink, the U.S. Open at Shinnecock, and the Open Championship at Royal Birkdale, which, boy, that'd be a heck of a home game win for Tommy. Which of those venues do you see best suited to Tommy winning a first career major?
I wouldn't say, I mean, Masters, he's had some good finishes at that event, but still, man, he's not the longest player. Like, he doesn't hit his irons necessarily crazy high. Now, I wouldn't call him a short player, but he doesn't like, his season average off of the tee is less than 300 yards. He's deadly accurate with that mini driver. So you have to point to golf courses that maybe you're going to be playing a little firmer. I've never played Shinny, but I've heard the golf course can get really firm. I think back to when they lost the golf course back in the last time they played it, when I was at Brooks Koepka one. Is that right? At Shinny.
Yeah.
I don't know how that place plays. It's really hard for me to give a good guesstimate there. And then the U.S. Open is at Cheney, or where's
Royal
PGA's
Birkdale.
PGA's where?
Aronimink.
I don't know anything about Aronimink either. I'm sorry. Yeah. So I've never played Birkdale. My mind would go to Birkdale with how well he's played at Open Championships. How important it is to be accurate off the tee. That's definitely a starting pack for any Open Championship for the most part. The Open, I think, will be the place where he either wins that or a U.S. Open.
Yeah, I think, look, Royal Birkdale is the one I'm rooting for sure, because the scenes there, the storylines there would be unreal.
Insane.
I'm so curious, having, you know, literally set eyes on the property at Shinnecock while it's getting just hammered with a deluge of rain, and like wanting to get back there as fast as I could and actually play the place to understand it better. It's just that I think back to, I forget which guest we had on, but just talking about Scotty at the U.S. Open at Pinehurst. And how you'd think that the U.S. Open is this execution test and the best iron player is really going to thrive in that setting. But in reality, the way those greens were shaped, there was just one spot on each of those greens where you had to hit the golf ball. So really, when everyone was playing the same sort of iron game and having the same putts, and it really kind of almost neutralized Scotty's advantage in that sort of situation. So I really would love to understand more the Shinnecock green complexes, and of course I've watched it on TV for past U.S. Opens, but understanding the property better and who it's going to, because you'd think a guy like Tommy Fleetwood, who hits it straight and who can keep it out of all the nasty fescue you see lining those fairways at Shinnecock, that venue would suit him. But I'd have to understand more about those greens and where they can put pins and how that could neutralize some of his advantages to say whether or not I like that better than Birkdale as a place for him to win a first major.
Tommy can win any of these major championship venues. You could point to one being better than another. I think firm always helps Tommy just from a length standpoint. He's not the longest. He's definitely not the shortest, but he's deadly accurate. And he hits it where he's looking more often than not. A very solid putter. That's improved a ton over the years. Really, he probably could have won major championships to this point if his putter is at the level that it's at right now. I would say that Tommy does not have a weakness in his game. And if he can just continues to give himself chances. I know we said that he said that over and over towards the end of the year when he just was knocking on the door. Well, guess what? When you break through, sometimes the floodgates open, and it seems that for Tommy Fleetwood, a player who's won plenty of times on the DP World Tour, we know he's capable of winning. He's done it plenty of times. Broke through in the PGA Tour, won the Tour Championship, back in the circle with DP World Tour, and here we are talking about the potential big three. I'm not ready to make that jump yet. Yes, he's a very good player. I see him playing very well on the very firm golf courses and tough tracks on the PGA Tour at signature events. So I continue to see him be big part of the storyline next year in 2026. And we'll see if he's able to make that jump at the majors where he kind of breaks that door down and wins one.
All right, Smiley, we are about 50 plus minutes into this episode, and somehow we've exceeded all the rundown items. I had lots of additional things I want to talk about. Marco Pinge playing great on the DP World Tour, the whole amateurism debate that's been raging in golf media circles the past few weeks. We're going to shelve those topics for later, so stay tuned to the Smiley Show. You're going to have your one episode, your one treasured episode every week. We're going to break down those things. But
on Tuesday, it's got to recalibrate my mind too, because I'm so used to Monday, Wednesday drops. So tomorrow morning when I pull up my phone just to see, all right, it was the episode up and it's going to be not be up. And I'm like, hold on, what's going on, guys? And it's like the course is closed. You know?
It's perfect and it's imperfect, because most people, like for me here at home in Durham, Hope Valley is closed on Mondays. So you're like, oh, it aligns with that. It's like, well, that's the day when I want to listen to something for golf because I can't go play.
Here's the other thing is most people are busy on Mondays, and that Tuesday is maybe a little lighter. Still busy, but
Look at this guy.
Just a thought.
Look at this guy. A little Mr. Positivity over here. The last thing I do want to touch on here is kind of the flip side of the Ryder Cup, really. On the losing side, Xander Schauffele. And I went back and looked at this, and for all the, you know, the sort of, I don't think we critique Xander, but just all the negatives we kind of placed on the USA team, you know, outside of really Cam Young, Xander tied Cam for the most points earned on the American side, 3 points earned over the course of that week. And so just Xander's just won, of course, recently on the PGA Tour, the Bay Current Classic. So just looking at Xander's year, maybe unpacking it a little bit, because it was going to be difficult to match his 2024 performance, winning two majors. But I think even Xander would tell you 2025 probably beneath his standards, or at least his renewed standards after he became a major winner. He, of course, missed 2 months of the season with a rib injury between the Century and the Arnold Palmer Invitational. For a guy who's usually one of the best putters on tour, was, I think you'd say, is disappointingly average. And I thought, and maybe you can kind of reiterate this, because we talked a little bit about this, the Ryder Cup, is that maybe some of that had to do with a loft issue on his putter, which I found interesting. And then for a guy that's usually the East Lake Whisperer, didn't even qualify for the Tour Championship this year. But despite all that, he still made all four major cuts, had top tens at the Masters and the Open Championship. As mentioned, co-leading point earner for Team USA in the losing effort of Bethpage, 3.1, and then wins the Bay Current Classic. And again, we talked about Tommy's strength of field at the DP World India Championship. Bay Current, not the strongest field in the world, was the 39th strongest field in 2025, one below the Dunhill and one above Vedanta. But in looking at this and looking at the trend of this past few months for Xander, does this kind of feel like the get right that he needed as we look towards 2026 and finding that form again?
Was it ever? It just feels so important for Xander heading into next year. He's a player that, gosh, not only did we talk about him, we were screaming from the rooftops. We couldn't wait for him to get started in 2026, coming off of two major championships.
2025, I think you mean there, right?
Yeah. 2025. Yeah. I mean, we had just the highest hopes set for the guy, you know, after the massive year, just felt like he was going to continue on, especially, again, when you talk about his game, there's just not a whole lot that was ever felt like he could get off, unless of course that he had an injury pop up, and that's what happened. It took a long time, for him to get sorted through the injury. And then, and unfortunately for him, I think the toughest part for Xander, and he'll probably say the same, is that when he came back, he's playing his way into shape on golf courses that are really hard. Mm-hmm. When you show up at the Florida Swing, you'd like to have some tournaments underneath your belt, or at least if not tournaments, a lot of prep at home done, you know, just playing a bunch at home where you're really challenging yourself, whether it's playing matches or, you know, really advanced practice, and having to show up at Bay Hill as your first start. It's not exactly where you'd like to be to figure out where your game is at. And just a snapshot for Xander Schauffele at the end of the year, when you look at all of his stats, you kind of mentioned the putting. He was 130th strokes gained putting, this past season, which is, he's been a top 10 putter. And I just wanted to kind of look in even in more in depth, from 4 to 8 feet, it was 143rd. So really just those momentum putts, when you talk about whether they're for birdie or for par, the putts that you got to make to keep the momentum going in round. He was struggling to make them this past year, and I think he's always had one of the best setups. He's got nice high hands for somebody with a left hand low type of style putting. Lines look really incredible, but it really struggled all year with the matching his line and with the speed. So when we look to next year, Charlie, I really expect a big bounce back here for Xander. This was a huge event for him. Xander is a world-class player, world-class talent, no weaknesses in his game. And seeing that his ball striking kind of came back to life, just the consistency. I would say that he showed at times over 72 holes that he has the shots. It just wasn't consistent enough. Like, you go look at his iron play, it was pretty dang solid throughout the year, but he would have weeks where he would drive it okay, weeks he'd drive it well, and just wasn't having everything matching up to where he was able to put weeks and weeks together to where you kind of build that momentum and confidence heading into big weeks where you felt like, you know, Xander was a part of the storyline heading into the week and could win the tournament. It always felt like we were thinking, all right, you know, Xander could just flip it on like a switch of the hat, like any good player can do. But the reality is golf isn't that easy. You know, sometimes you find lightning in a bottle where everything works, but to be really, really consistent and a high elite player in this game, you have to kind of build your way to these big events to play really well. And, you know, I look for more consistency out of Xander. I think outside of Scotty and Rory, Xander over the past, decade has been one of the most consistent players. Hasn't missed a tour championship till this past year, if I'm by my records.
And I don't know what the cut streak is at now, but again, in spite of everything that he went through, and especially to your point, coming back from injury and that Florida swing, didn't miss a single cut this year, which is incredibly impressive, trying to kind of knock the rust off the game. You think somewhere along the line, you know, he'd have a little bit of a slip up, especially with the putting being uncharacteristically bad. I think it's such an interesting sort of like sliding doors moment at the end of 2024, because we had Scotty, who had an improvement in putting, but it still wasn't, you know, where it is now, which is, man, you know, he is going to be tough to beat when he's fully healthy and his game's clicking on all cylinders. He'd gone to the that sort of claw or saw toward the end of the year, used that to win the Hero World Challenge. And Xander, at that point, we were talking about, you know, using the baseball analogy, he's the 1-5 tool guy that we have on tour. And so, man, he could really rip it up in 2025. Both of them get injured to start the season. Scotty, of course, the infamous lasagna incident or ravioli incident, whatever it was. And Xander, of course, with the whole rib cage deal. And it is Scotty who comes back after he kind of gets healthy and gets right and starts putting like, you know, crazy good and wins a zillion times. And is the guy who really kind of finds the form that he wants to this year, wins two majors. And Xander never really kind of finds that level again. So I think it's great to see him win at the Bay Current Classic. I think I'm really intrigued to see what happens in the offseason with the whole putter situation. If it was just a lack of feel, if it was an equipment thing, like you've mentioned, if it's going to someone who he trusts and advises him on it, like,
I think he just ran out of time, man. I really do feel like if he had more time at the end of the year, he would have been able to kind of piece it together. We saw what he did at the Ryder Cup. It just felt like the clock was just shifted too far back, and he was playing catch up the whole year. Yeah. One quick question too. I want you to like close your eyes and imagine this.
Okay, all right, here we go.
All right, Charlie, Xander Schauffele won the Bay Current Classic. Where was that? Where was this event? And I know, man, it was in Japan, but like Bay Current Classic.
I have the
screams everything other than Japan. So like, where in your mind should this be played?
I already have the, well, okay. If you were like, okay, the first brain you're going to get is Charlie's just going to like PGA Tour schedule brain, like what he already knows about previously existing events and which sponsor dropped and which one got picked up. So if you said Bay Current, I'd be like, okay, it's Bermuda now. It's now the Bay Current Bermuda Classic.
That's where my head went to, because of the fall schedule. But in my mind, I thought it, like, take away the PGA Tour schedule and just say like, where should this event be played? Like, I said, it's at TPC Harding Park. Like, that's,
oh really?
Bay Current Classic is at I'm
going, and I don't know why it's popped in my head. It's like, this is at Cabot St. Lucia. We got the Bay Current happening down at St. Lucia. It's got like a little trendy, like sort of jet ski-ish logo. I have no clue what Bay Current is or does, but that's a sick company name. In fact, I should probably Google that so I can learn more about Bay Current before I
see. That's where they get you. They sponsor an event in Japan to make you think, wait, what? Are they a Japanese company? Like, what's going on?
Japanese consulting firm specializes in IT and strategy. See, I really wish they made jet skis. It'd make it a lot easier for us.
Is there office in San Francisco?
I believe headquarters Tokyo, Japan. I like that game. I like the game of what's the sponsor and what event should it be sponsoring instead of like actually where it was held. Well, there you have it. Those are my thoughts. Those are your thoughts on Xander. Those are some of my thoughts on Xander. I do think this could be a big year for him. And I think that's the most fun part of these off seasons is, you know, we start looking at all the guys who are seemingly getting their games back into form. You got guys like Tommy Fleetwood who are trending, you know, as high as they've ever trended in their careers, seemingly. You got guys like Xander Schauffele who are hoping to get it back. And then, you know, you have a whole host of other guys who you've seen Rom. Kind of ups and downs. Oh, man, Rom.
I'm excited to see what we get from Rom at the majors.
He's not going to play DP World Tour the rest of the year. He's not doing Race to Dubai.
I know. We need and to talk got that about whole all thing. That.
That's
at some point.
An episode in of itself. Like, is he going to be able to – how's that all going to work with the Ryder Cup?
Yeah.
You know, it's
– we honestly need to get an expert on to talk about – DP World Tour's potential strategy as they move forward with these LIV players. And we'll definitely get a good guest to educate all of us on what to expect with the DP World and these LIV guys, because it's a huge, huge talking point as we head towards a Ryder Cup that'll sneak up on us here in 2 years with players potentially ineligible.
Well, and I think too, and we can get into this in the episode itself, but it's like there is so much happening there, Smiley. Like there is the existing strategic partnership between the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour, where they're underpinning DP World Tour purses at a not insignificant expense. And so what happens when whoever that deal was cut prior to SSG, when SSG comes in and says, does this make sense anymore? And okay, maybe we don't, you know, we've already kind of cut back a little bit on what we're spending on the Champions Tour. Now we're looking at whether the investment makes sense on the DP World Tour. We're handing them 10 tour cards. And does that make sense? And so then if there's no financial underpinning of the DP World Tour, they're going to have to go out and get some money. I know of a tour that's got some money. I mean that. So do you want to, you know, cut off your nose to spite your face, whatever the saying is, by banning these guys right now, only to have to welcome them all back in a couple of years if LIV, because, you know, LIV's done a lot in the sponsorship front this offseason. It's interesting. I mean, I know it's been actually a nice brief respite to not talk about the business side of golf for a while. But every once in a while, I get a little, you know, I read a little Sports Business Shirt article. I'm like, I think I could do one of those episodes.
Yeah, definitely. Let's get Josh on.
Let's call Josh. Let's go to the pen. let's get Josh in. Let's get Jackson once I pull a hamstring.
Yeah, we'll definitely get him. All right.
That's it, huh?
See you next time. See you another week.
I see you another week with we got some exciting guests coming up. We got some fun stuff banked, and we got a few more in the docket. So here you go. Once a week. You know where to find us, podcast, YouTube. And I guess we'll talk to you. I don't know how to dismount anymore.
Mason Howell next week, USAM champ. Already did this interview with Mason. He was really just a delight to talk to. Just so nice to be that young and that good, having everything in front of him and being able to catch up with him post Walker Cup was a really fun combo. Definitely get into some more amateur conversations next week. And we'll continue to touch up on a lot of topics this fall. There's a lot to get into, and we'll try to keep you guys on your toes for keeping yourselves educated in the landscape of the game and golf. And also just the general hijinks of the fall. Football season's over for both of us, and we're looking forward to gymnastics season. LSU looks to have a good gymnastics team. North Carolina, I'm not sure. Maybe
we're men's golf, baby. They're playing some primo golf down there in the Williams Cup at Eagle Point. I'm locked in to the leaderboard, live leaderboard there.
So dumb with football.
Yeah, we don't even watch it. We're watching Premier League. We watched Premier League all Sunday. We didn't watch any football today. I'm done.
All right, I'm out.
Peace.
See ya.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our lovely fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too. So please keep it up.
For all the good people on YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes. So I'm happy to come on and shoot the